It is so good to be here in Limbo with you all. A parishioner back in Salisbury has a mountain home up here and often speaks about coming this way for an altitude adjustment. But that's exactly what this week is, an altitude adjustment that allows clergy and their families to get away from the demands of parish ministry and the summer heat while enjoying the gift of your company in this lovely community. This is our fifth summer here, and we are so grateful for this invitation and your hospitality. I pray that your time here is restorative for you, just as it is for us. Gratitude is not just a nicety that I've decided to start this sermon with. Gratitude is the point of this sermon, and it is the theme that we find in the reading both from Luke and Psalm 42. We begin with the Gerizim demoniac, as he is often called. And at first glance, he is a very strange character. He lives not in a city or even out in the wilderness, but he finds shelter among the tombs. He has no community, as the only people who have not rejected him are the dead. He doesn't wear any clothing. He's been stripped of any sense of dignity or social standing. He has no protection from the scorching sun or the blustery wind. And this man is possessed. A description that we really don't know what to do with. Can we attach a medical or psychological diagnosis to his condition? Or is this the sort of thing that we only see in horror movies? Obviously, I don't know. I never met this guy. But the most we can say about him is that he was not himself. He was not in control of himself. Jesus heals this man. But because he is such an odd character, we might be tempted to just sit back and say, "Well done, Jesus. That was so nice of you to take care of that man who was in trouble." But you see, Jesus, I'm not like him. I live in a nice home, not a mausoleum. I have a closet full of clothing, and for the most part, I am of sound mind. What does this story have anything to do with me? Well, we are more like this man than we might realize at first. Sure, we might live in nice homes, but as psychologists and sociologists tell us, we aren't quite at home. You can choose your favorite expert, Brené Brown, David Brooks, Jonathan Haidt, and they all point to our nation's anxiety, loneliness, and mental health crisis. However we want to track the data, we are struggling. The aforementioned David Brooks authored a piece last month called "We Are the Most Rejected Generation," in which he argues that rampant rejection has become a way of life for those in their 20s. Whether it's college applications, summer internships, job applications, or first dates, rejection is not just a part of life, it is becoming a way of life. Brooks writes about students who apply for dozens of internships and apply for hundreds of jobs without getting a single interview, presumably because some algorithm has weeded out their resume. There's even a growing trend among high school prom goers. Fewer and fewer take dates. Instead, gendered groups go together without a date because that avoids the potential for rejection. Add to the mix social media, which does not help anyone to feel better about themselves, and we have a real mess on our hands. In this article, Brooks writes, "I asked the students I spoke to at elite colleges if living in this exclusionary regime affected their personalities. One young woman told me that it made her harsher. She put on a protective shell. A foreign student noticed that her American peers all had perfect elevator pitches. They were masters of impression management." Brooks continues, "As a sometimes college teacher, I've come to recognize this as the Miss America syndrome. You ask a certain kind of promising undergrad a question, and he or she will put on a beaming Miss America smile and give you the perfectly articulated answer that is carefully designed to warm the cockles of your middle-aged heart. One young man told me that the system caused him to value security and stability above all else, to find a place where he would not be vulnerable to the next rejection." End quote. Just because we have houses does not mean that we are at home. We are longing for a place to be at home, to be safe, to be accepted, and that makes us a lot like this Gerizim man. And though we all have clothing, as the author Elizabeth Oldfield has put it, we are constantly playing the status game, evaluating where we stand in relation to others, scripting every conversation and every email through the lens of what version of ourselves we want others to see. But we also all struggle with imposter syndrome, worrying that, like the emperor, that we have no clothes. When the demons give their name to Jesus, they say that they are legion. Clearly, this is the gospel writer making a political point about the Roman occupation of the Holy Land, as a legion is a Roman military unit. But we too are possessed by a legion of influences, schedules, consumerism, projects, reputation, appearances, dieting, our past mistakes, our imperfections, wealth, addictions, depression, illness, how the kids are doing. And I'm sure you all could add dozens more things to that list. If I ask you the question, what would you do if you were free of whatever is holding you back? What comes to mind? In a recently published book, David Zoll asks, what would you do? What risk would you take? What would you say if you were not afraid? What would you do if you could undertake something for the sheer joy of doing it rather than any outcome it might produce? Well, whatever those barriers and obstacles are that are preventing you from doing that thing, those are the legions that we are possessed by. So as it turns out, we're really not all that different from this Gerizim man, which is a great place for us to be. Because Jesus comes to give liberation to the captive, rest to the weary, and relief to the burdened. Luke tells us that Jesus, in order to save this man, goes to the opposite side from Galilee. Friends, no matter how far away from Jesus you feel, no matter how far you have strayed, no matter how forgotten you feel, Jesus comes to each of us to make us whole. Jesus will cross whatever boundary there is to bring us lost sheep back into the fold. Whether we feel like we're adrift, lost, rejected, stressed, bound, or burdened, we are all looking for the relief of being free and being at home in the love of God. It's the sentiment that we heard in Psalm 42, as the deer longs for the water brooks, so my soul longs for you, O God. My soul is athirst for God, athirst for the living God. Or as St. Augustine put it, our hearts are restless until they rest in God. Or if you want a more modern reference, you too saying, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. We are made in love, by love, and for love. But our society, it has a way of making us forget our belovedness and chase after idols that always leave us feeling empty. Jesus, though, brings us alongside those still waters and lets us drink from his refreshing grace. This Gerizim man, he had been homeless. And after Jesus set him free, Jesus tells him, return to your home. Jesus does the same for us. He frees us to be at home, to be at peace. Because Jesus is enough, he gives us that sense of enoughness that our hearts are yearning for. We don't have to find our acceptance on social media or at the award ceremony or whatever list you like to pay attention to. Jesus gives us the relief from having to perform, compete, and hustle because our restless hearts can rest in his enoughness. As we pray at the start of worship, to God all hearts are open, all desires known, and from whom no secrets are hid. And that very same God who knows us has chosen us, blesses us, cherishes us, and loves us, not because we've done anything to deserve this love, but because we are created and cherished by the God who is love. In other words, we are freed from building a reputation, making a name for ourselves, or chasing after accomplishments. These things are all graciously given to us. We are God's cherished children. And so all that is left for us to do is to accept our acceptance, to enjoy our forgiveness, and share in God's abundant love. And this is precisely what Jesus does for the Gerizim and what Jesus does for us. Though our reading this morning from Luke said that Jesus healed the man, that's really not what the word there means. The word is saved. Jesus did not just merely heal him and say, okay, go have a nice life. Jesus saved him from all the things that prevented him from flourishing in God's love. Jesus eliminated every barrier to his restoration. I don't know what doubts, sins, fears, or insecurities you carry, but I promise Jesus is saving you from them. And as we see in this passage, people are scared by this. We often prefer the devil that we know to the freedom that we do not. We adapt to our dysfunctions rather than having to face the fear of change. Just imagine if this man had started chasing after those pigs because the demons that tormented him were more comfortable and more familiar. I really do believe that our lives and our world would be more like God intends for us if we could just trust that we are loved and that we are enough more than all of those voices that tell us otherwise. And if we also knew that that was true of everyone else. But hanging on to this message of grace is hard in such an ungraceful world. And that is where this sermon comes full circle to gratitude. At the end of Psalm 42, we said, "Put your trust in God, for I will yet give thanks to him." And Jesus tells this man that he had saved, "Declare how much God has done for you." Gratitude is how Jesus sets us up to be freed and hang on to this gift of our salvation. What has God done for you? From studies at Harvard to the testimony of mystics, we know that gratitude is a sure and certain pathway to happiness, peace, health, and positive relationships. Gratitude keeps us connected to God and grounded in humility. One of the most popular TED Talks of all time is called "Want to Be Happy? Be Grateful." It could be keeping a note on your phone or keeping a journal where you write down all the things that you are grateful for at the end of the day. It could be making a habit of going out of your way to thank people who help you out. It could be that every time you give a gift to the church or to charity, you say, "Thank you, God, for all the blessings of my life." Gratitude is how we experience and hang on to that salvation that we have been given in Jesus. And there are a lot of people that need the good news of God's relief, which is why Jesus tells us to declare how much God has done for us. Gratitude is not just a nice feeling to have in our hearts. It is something to proclaim throughout the city, just as this newly saved man is told to do. People are athirst for the living God, starving for a word of belonging, searching for relief for their weary hearts. Our witness to God's salvation in Jesus is what our world is hungry for. It's something to give some prayerful thought and attention to in response to this reading. What has Jesus done for you? And how can you tell that story of your salvation? It's been said that evangelism is simply one hungry beggar telling another hungry beggar where to find bread. We are blessed and grateful that Jesus will soon feed us all with the bread of life, with the bread of salvation, the bread of relief. For this and for all of God's mercies, we say, thanks be to God.